Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Thursday, February the 8th. Pretty day here in North Texas. A little chilly, but a very pretty pretty afternoon. Today we're going to talk about a couple of issues. I have a post coming out Friday morning. I call it the Pelosi Show, and I want to share with you a little bit of that. We're also going to talk about some interesting details happening on the 2018 elections. I have a post over at the American Thinker about that, where you're seeing what you always see in these midterm elections. When the Democrats want to win the House, they always run these centrist candidates, and they're very effective in some cases. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. But I want to begin with a couple of stories that I saw this morning in the news. There's apparently some informant who's talking about this uranium deal. With the Clintons. You may remember the controversy about the uranium that was sold to the Russians. Well, apparently there is an informant who's talking and connecting some of the dots, or helping the investigation connect some of the dots. Look, it's a pay to play. Is that what they call these things? I have felt almost from the very beginning, and I'm old enough to remember when the Clintons came into the political scene or the national scene, in 91, 92, I have always felt that this is a corrupt couple, a couple that is out for themselves. In many ways, I think they've done a tremendous harm to our political system, to our body politics. And I just, if I was a Democrat, I would want the Clintons to disappear. Just go away. Stop talking. Stop, getting yourselves involved in anything. Just walk away. Because this is a couple that is corrupt, and it just seems like every time you read anything about them, there's something shady going on. So I remember doing a show a couple of years ago where I was talking to somebody about this, and I made the comment that the Clintons are like they're just like a cancer when they get into a political system. And I really feel that way. I think they've done this country a great deal of harm just by being in public office. And we haven't heard everything. I think there's a lot more coming about this uranium, about the FBI, about the investigations, and all of it. The Clintons seem to be in the middle of it. It's just amazing. Just amazing what two people can do. I can't think of any other politicians who've done this much harm to our body politic than these two. There's a very interesting story. Before we get to my memo about Nancy Pelosi, there's a very interesting story that I saw today regarding President Obama and President Trump. You know, you always hear from the media when they're analyzing President Trump, you always hear about how, his approval ratings are so low. And Rasmussen, which is the name of a pollster, I'm sure some of you are familiar with it. Rasmussen, they've got a pretty good record. I'm not a big fan of polls, so I tend to always view them with a little skepticism. But Rasmussen has been at least reliable. In other words, what they predict turns out to be true most of the time. And they have a very interesting comparison. On this day in February 2010, which would have been President Obama's 14th month in office. So on February 2010, President Obama's approval was 44%. Of course, back then he was in the heat of the Obamacare situation. He was also, right after the Democrats lost the Senate seat in Massachusetts, the Senate seat that used to belong to the late Senator Kennedy. So he was at a low point, to say the least, and he was at 44. And if you now go to February 2018, or President Trump, He's at 48%. So 48 versus 44. That's pretty much within the margin of error. I'm not going to argue too much about that. But what that says to me is something very interesting. When you think of the negativity of the coverage of President Trump, when you think of the negative press, when you think of the attacks on President Trump, yes, there were some attacks on President Obama, but not at this stage of the campaign. He was still pretty much protected. And he clearly had a very friendly news media in 2010. So when you compare those two things, when you say on one hand you have a man who is constantly being attacked by the media, very negative media all the time, and then on the other hand you have a man who pretty much was given a free ride by the media, particularly in his first term. I mean, it's amazing to me that they would be like this in a poll, Obama at 44 and President Trump at 48. I just find that to be rather remarkable that they would be this close. So I guess what it also says to me is that the attacks of the media do not have as much of an impact, perhaps, on President Trump's approval as maybe we think they do. Because at 48%, he's roughly at a re-election. This is his re-election number. I mean, this is actually a very good re-election number for him. And what that says to me is that the media is attacking him. A lot of the establishment is attacking him, but yet he seems to survive. And I think he survives because the economy is doing well and because people are feeling better about the country, which is always, of course, an important thing when you're running for re-election. So interesting detail here about President Trump and comparing him to President Obama at this point, meaning 14 months into their presidency. We're going to take a little break, and I want to tell you about my friend Carlos Gevis. Carlos is a musician, and he gets around town. He plays all over, and we're so fortunate that we get to play his music on our radio program. Carlos is all over, as I say, here in the Dallas area, and I'm going to recommend that you check out his Facebook page. Just go to Facebook and put Carlos Gevis, G-U-E-D-E-S, and just check him out and find out where he's playing. He's all over town, and wherever he's playing, I can tell you two things. Number one, the food's going to be pretty good, and the background music is going to be even better. So check out my friend Carlos Gevis, and as I said, we're very proud of the fact that we get to play his music on our show. Well, Nancy Pelosi put on quite a show, didn't she? She spoke for 7 hours. High heels too. So, I mean, look, from the standpoint of energy, from the standpoint of standing there 7 hours reading letters and reading whatever she was reading, she wasn't really speaking so much. It wasn't like a speech. It was like she was reading all these letters that I guess she had gotten from dreamers and so on. And she spoke for 7 hours, which is a really remarkable presentation. So we give her a lot of credit for the energy. I'll just put it that way. I mean, as far as the energy is concerned, we'll give her a lot of credit. We don't give her a lot of credit, though, for being right. And we obviously think that there's a lot of hypocrisy here, because what I find remarkable about Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats, when they had the votes, they didn't do this. When they had the votes, they didn't do immigration reform. They didn't do DACA. And here they are now. They're desperately trying to somehow respond to many in the Dreamer community and many in the Hispanic community, as well as the liberal community, who feel like they're folding. They're just sort of throwing the towel and saying, we're not going to fight for the Dreamers. The reality is that they are folding, yes, but they're folding because their position is to the left of where the country is on immigration reform as well as DACA. And let me explain what I mean by that. I think most people in the country are willing to consider doing something for these dreamers and so on. I think they're willing to say, okay, fine, let's do something for them. Let's maybe provide some kind of a legalization avenue or whatever. That's what I support, some kind of a legalization so that they can stay here, particularly if they're going to school or working in some capacity. I don't have any problem with providing them with some kind of a legal status so that they don't get deported, and especially if they're doing well in school. And I've even heard some of them want to go into the military, which of course would be incredible. But The problem is that the Democrats don't get that most of the country wants something more than just the legalization of the Dreamers. I think most of the country would like to see something back, such as border security. I personally think that there has to be better employer verification so that an employer out there, if you're hiring somebody and he or she shows you a Social Security card, you should be able to go somewhere and verify that. Now, I think it's called E-Verify, which many employers do right now and tends to work out rather well. I think we should be enforcing Social Security numbers that way. We should also be controlling, frankly, some of the chain immigration. I think it's gotten totally out of control. And the lottery, I think, makes absolutely no sense either. Then when you get into the whole idea of merit immigration, I completely support that. I think that, you know, the United States has every right in the world to say, hey, we need these kinds of people, so we're going to focus on getting, let's say, engineers or whatever. We're going to focus on those people. These people are going to have priority, not necessarily family members, or let me qualify that. Mother and father, I guess, are okay. But when I say family members, I'm talking about the fifth uncle that you've never met who suddenly wants to get sponsored. What we're going to do as a country, the United States, is focus on, let's say, skills of certain type, engineers, let's say, people that we need in our economy. We're going to focus on that, and that's going to be our priority. That's what a merit system is basically all about. And I don't see anything wrong with that, particularly in a world like this where there's so much technology, and you're always going to be short people because the technology is changing so fast that you're always going to need the very latest. So that's where we need to be going. And that's where I think the country is. The country is not in a situation where they just want to legalize Dreamers. So when they give you these polls that say, well, 3 out of 4 Americans would like to see these Dreamers legalized, well, that's probably true. But there's more to that poll. There's usually another question that says yes, but they also want border security and all of that. So I think Nancy Pelosi put on quite a show. Again, I commend her for the energy, but at the end of the day, she is out of the mainstream when it comes to this whole topic of DACA and this whole topic of immigration. And I just don't know what else to say other than that. And that's why I don't think it was very successful. I mean, it was successful maybe in her base, but I don't think it went too much beyond that, beyond her base. I don't think she made or she persuaded anybody yesterday by giving that long, long speech over at the U.S. At the U.S. House of Representatives. Just a couple of quick notes here at the end. We remember today Jules Verne. And for any of you like me who grew up reading books in school like Journey to the Center of the Earth and 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, The Mysterious Island, if you remember those books from school, I think those books were kind of popular with boys. I don't remember a lot of girls reading them. But with boys, I remember they were very popular. And then, of course, we got to see the movies when Disney made those movies. Journey to the Center of the Earth, the original version, is still the best. And 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea was just fantastic. So we celebrate today Jules Verne, who was born in France, and he died in 1905. I mean, the man had such creativity, had such vision. Everything that, you know, everything that he wrote about has pretty much come true. I mean, it's just amazing to me what vision he had in thinking about all these things that would be happening in the future. And of course, one of my favorite characters is Captain Nemo. And everyone's favorite submarine, of course, is the Nautilus. Great movies and great books. And in a way, I was kind of sorry that I saw the movie because I had this imagination of the ship and everything else. And I guess that's what happens when you read the book, when you read the book first. So Jules Verne, one of the greats, one of the all-time great writers and authors, a man of an incredible imagination, to say the least. We remember today, 1958, or 60 years ago today, that George Harrison met John Paul and Paul McCartney, and John Lennon and Paul McCartney, and the Beatles, or at least the beginning of the Beatles, were formed on this day in 1958. They still had a couple of changes to make. Ringo Starr came in, I think, in 62, a little bit later. But to say the least, George, Paul, and John, at least 3 of the 4 Beatles, got together on this day in 1958. Have a wonderful day, everybody. We'll talk to you later. This is Silvio Canto in very pretty North Texas today. Bye-bye, everybody.